If you have not changed the way that you buy meat yet, you should make the switch to Good Ranchers today. When you subscribe, Good Ranchers will give you 1.5 pounds of free bacon in every box for a year. That's a $240 value. And this bacon tastes so good because Good Ranchers pigs are never crated and they never use antibiotics or added hormones. And they have heritage breeds that have historically produced the best pork in the world. Subscribe today and get their price lock guarantee. What you pay today will be what you pay a year from now. With Good Ranchers, I consistently get the same quantity and quality of meat every single time. Their all-natural burgers, USDA prime steaks, and better-than-organic chicken have changed my standard for great meat, and it will change yours too. Visit GoodRanchers.com and use code Dana for $20 off your next box. Get free bacon, great meat, a secure price, and a bonus of $20 off today at GoodRanchers.com with code Dana when you subscribe. GoodRanchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%. And that's because of this act, the actions that this president has.
I really, really want to understand her math with that so bad. I so want to understand her math. That was just that. So that was her remark yesterday. And she's it's Karine Jean-Pierre. And she's discussing, because we're getting ready for this Title 42 business. We're getting ready for an influx, and we're going to talk about some of the numbers that they said were going to be at the border, et cetera, which I don't know if I even buy some of, you know, I don't buy any of it. But I just really would like to know where she's getting this math from, because that is not at all what any of us have ever heard or have seen. That's not what that's completely contrary to what Border Patrol has said, too. That's like completely contrary to everything that Border Patrol has said. So what gives? I mean, it is an entirely laughable remark that she made. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. And to start off with, this is one of the big things. There's quite a bit to get into today, ladies and gentlemen. But this, first and foremost, so she's saying, when she was talking about this was yesterday, yesterday's White House press conference. She was saying that, well, it's, you know, the program has been so successful, it's down by 90%, and it's specifically because of the actions that President Biden has taken, and et cetera. Here's the issue, though, and Bill Malugin has also addressed this. The issue with her claim here is that there was a point when you had Venezuelans and people coming in from Nicaragua, Cubans, et cetera, after there was a ever so slight policy change, that is when you saw a minor dip. But then the problem was that it exploded by like 800-something%. I mean, just apparently this on the very day. So yesterday when she said this, according to Chief Raul Ortiz, who is the chief of U.S. Border Patrol, he reported that at the border in a 72-hour span, there were alone 22,000 apprehensions. So I just want to reiterate, in 72 hours, there were over 22,000 apprehensions. And that number doesn't include the gotaways. He reported that in the past 72 hours, this is the Border Patrol Chief, Raul Ortiz, that two agents were assaulted. There were approximately 22,220 apprehensions, 806 pounds of methamphetamine confiscated, 62 pounds of cocaine. They had 5 maritime events, 2 sex offenders, 2 tractor-trailer events, convicted murderers and gang members that were coming across that they apprehended. This, again, does not include the gotaways. So for her to say something as asinine as this completely belies the actual facts. It's almost like you have the administration that's not even at all whatsoever talking to Border Patrol. They're completely at odds with Border Patrol in 2021 alone. And this is according to, I'm looking at Customs and Border Patrol, their website. It's cbp.gov, and they have their data that they tabulate and they put it up there regularly. Now, according to Border Patrol alone, they had in 2021 1,734,686 illegal entrants who tried to illegally cross into the country at the southern border. In 2022, that number expanded to 2,378,944. And though they're still tabulating March through April's numbers, so we don't have that yet. But apparently we are on record to beat that. We are on record to beat that. Now, I have no idea why Karine Jean-Pierre is up there stating the absolute opposite. You have Alejandro Mayorkas, you have Karine Jean-Pierre, you have the vice president, you have all of these people who are out there saying that this isn't, they won't acknowledge that it's a crisis. They say that this is, you know, this is an issue that's, that it's solved. It's not, they act like it's a solved issue. And they couldn't be further from the truth. And this is, it's asinine. Even and Alejandro Mayorkas, I mean, he, when Raul Ortiz, and again, chief of Border Patrol, when he testified before Congress, he was saying that the United States, he told members of Congress, the United States does not have operational control with its southern border. Even though Alejandro Mayorkas is out there saying, well, no, we totally do. It's completely under control. There's no reason for her to go out and lie to everyone. People can see what's happening at the border themselves. And she actually had the audacity to try to dodge all of the criticism of this and push it back on Republicans. She had said that Republicans, quote, have continued to use this as a political stunt, a political tool, and not actually come to the table to have a conversation on how to, you know, she's talking about protect people who are trying to enter the country illegally. Oh my gosh. It is unbelievable. And so I am just, I mean, I don't even, it's stunning. It's stunning. But we have this Title 42. I mean, it's down 40, it's down 90%. Down 90%. It's down so much. Well, then why is it that you have Chicago Mayor, outgoing Mayor Lori Lightfoot begging Greg Abbott to stop sending illegal aliens to Chicago if it's down by more than 20%? Why do you have Eric Adams, who is an absolute, I'm sorry, he is an ass. That man is an ass. I know that some people try to sit here and try. I'm not at all either going to mince my words on this. This is disgusting. An elected official goes to the public and has the audacity. You want to talk about, we don't have a problem, it's down 90%. Why is Mayor Eric Adams out there saying, oh, please, Governor Abbott, don't send us any more illegal aliens? And then he has the audacity to say, well, he's sending illegal aliens only to the black cities. He's sending illegal aliens only to black cities, black mayors. How about he's sending people who entered the country illegally to cities that have declared themselves to be sanctuary cities, Eric Adams? What does that have to do with your skin color? That is such a lazy dodge. It is a lazy, unintellectual, and absolutely illiberal dodge of your responsibility. If you did not want people being shipped to your city, then maybe you should not have declared yourself a sanctuary city. Maybe you should not be giving people free iPhones. Maybe you should not be giving them free cell phone service. Maybe you should not be putting cash in pocket. Maybe you should not be putting them up in nice hotels in downtown Manhattan after declaring yourself a sanctuary city. If you did not want people to be sent to Manhattan. Golly, I'm so tired of this race card being played. It is a lazy, illiberal dodge. The moment somebody hits racism, I'm like, you're lazy. You are a lazy non-thinker. I mean, I would say more, but I'd be fined. I think it is evil. It is a sin and it is evil, evil to its core, to sit here and say, well, you know, we can't deal with all these people that you're sending to us because I'm a black mayor. You're a sanctuary city. Democrats campaigned. Oh, look, these evil Republicans. We are sanctuary cities. Shall I spend the rest of the week show playing all their ads? Shall I spend the rest of the week show going through bit by bit how all of these Democrats, including His Honor Eric Adams, how they all went and they campaigned on, oh, we are so much more compassionate. We are a sanctuary city. These Republicans hate people. Oh my gosh, they're sending them here? Oh, call the National Guard. We can't have them trampling on the hydrangeas in Martha's Vineyard. Oh no, I do declare. That's what they did. That's how they reacted. Who knows what they were thinking? Oh my gosh, they were terrified. Oh, you know, the compassion. Spare me. It's all theater. No, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse, and it's going to be on Democrats' hands. Now, Biden has called a debt ceiling meeting a week from today.
Week?
Yeah. You know, he's got to call a lid, Kane. I mean, he's busy doing whatever the hell he does when he calls a lid and goes to Delaware. I don't know. What does he do there? He's always in the basement. What does he do? I don't know what he does. Mom, meatloaf. I don't know. Janet Yellen says save the date because June 1st is the debt ceiling drop dead date. I'm going to be honest with you. Kind of just let's burn it all down. Let it go. Eh. I got stockpiles. I'll let it go. Right? I mean, I'm at that point. I said last night, we either need Jesus or Smod. I'd take both. But I'll have one or the other. But that is the drop dead date, apparently. And so, I don't know. I will say, one of the big fights is this fight that had to do with the big corn and ethanol, which is so weird because some of the people who are the strongest on tax reform have been out there like implying that somehow ending corn subsidies is a tax increase, which is like saying that if you give people a tax cut, that you're spending money. It's not the same thing. We're going to talk more about this here in the next couple of days. Now, on top of all of this, the First Republic story. I had this in your headlines. If you sign up for the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse Substack, this came out to you this morning in your subscribed headlines, if you get that. And the feds have seized First Republic Bank, second biggest bank failure in United States history. J.P. Morgan is set to assume control. FDIC seized it. They're handing over control of its assets, all of it, to J.P. Morgan. It was heading off a near collapse that they said would have already rocked a already financial sensitive financial sector, reeling from the collapse of tech-aligned banks, et cetera, et cetera. Silicon Valley Bank, New York Signature Bank. Wall Street Journal said that J.P. Morgan is going to assume all of First Republic's $92 billion in deposits, insured and uninsured. Okay, so here's what I want to know. What's it going to cost you? I mean, how are you going to foot the bill? $13 billion to take over and sell First Republic to J.P. Morgan. That's the federal government. They initially, FDIC estimated that the cost was going to be, via Daily Caller, about $13 billion. That was the press release that they had. Now they're going to charge fees to recoup their losses. That's going to be passed down to everybody else, according to economists. Daily Caller News Foundation, FDIC, gets its money from banks by levying fees, and those changes are passed on to customers. To cover the cost of the three recent bank collapses, the FDIC is going to levy a special assessment that's going to increase the cost that we're paying. Whew. We're all going to pay more. And Biden said, taxpayers, I'm going to quote him. He said this at the National Small Business Week event. Quote, taxpayers are not the ones that are on the hook. Lies. We have a lot more. I haven't even gotten through half of what is just in the first segment of this hour. Kitty diddlers could get the death penalty now in Florida. Yes. Dream come true. Drag them. We've got that. Hunter Biden is being forced to answer questions about his finances. The judge, after that, his appearance in court in Arkansas, judge said, no, you can't hide and you can't redact it. You got to do it. And they're coming after your leaf blowers. Man, I'm going to just say, Papa is going to lose his ever-loving mind As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus, and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so Steve, here's your three. Because Steve was really worried last week. He's like, who's the third one? Gordon Lightfoot, who he, totally Canadian. I don't know why I didn't know he was Canadian. I didn't know he was Canadian. Anyway, Gordon Lightfoot has passed away. He leaves behind six children, several grandchildren. He was apparently one of the, I mean, a major, obviously, one of the best-selling recording artists for Canadians. So he's passed away. So that's the third. Because we always, it happens in threes. It's my grandmother's rule, which still lives on after her passing. It's, I don't know. Speaking of which, scientists discover, what a segue. What happens seconds after you die? Seconds after you die. Apparently, they say that activity in the brain and heart ramps up. They said it's a surge in brainwave activity just before death. Interesting. Oh, boy. Our friend Larry sent us this. He is, like, one of the funniest people that listens to the show and follows along live. Las Vegas's only alphabet LGBTQ hotel is going to bring a sense of community. Guys, the thing is called the Bent Inn. The Bent Inn. I-N-N. The Bent Inn. That is literally the name of it. It used to be known as the Moonlight Hotel. It's going to open as the Bent Inn. Oh, operated by owners Mark Hunter and Greg Kafka. It's the only alphabet property in the valley. Really? Got to have like a special, like, this is the hotel for people who have sex like this. Like, that's, I don't know. I have more, but I can't stop talking about this story. Stick with us.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
I didn't expect to hear anything back, but I felt like it was important to once again try to engage the governor, but also let him know what his policies and practices are doing in cities like Chicago. We are completely tapped out. We have no more space, no more resources. And frankly, we're already in a surge. We've been seeing over the last week, 200 plus people coming to Chicago every single day.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse, Lori. It's going to get worse. Welcome back to the show. You were pent-up, rage-filled curmudgeon here today. And it's good to be with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program on Facebook, YouTube, where we have great discussions, and Channel 347 DirecTV. Well, Tough Beans, did you know Chicago has been a sanctuary city since 1985? Might be part of the problem. That's when the mayor of the time, Harold Washington, issued an executive order declaring that the city was a sanctuary city, and they prohibited city employees from enforcing federal immigration laws. And it's evolved beyond even that. They've always provided resources. And then you have this administration that was handing out free phones, free cell phones, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I remember, weren't there like cash incentives too? I mean, all of this to incentivize the illegal crossing of the border. The Obama administration spent $18 billion with some of this. I mean, this was a lot. I mean, it is... if when you are advertising yourself as a sanctuary city for years, as Chicago has done, when you talk about, you know, the lodgings that you provide, the services that you provide, people are given driver's licenses. In some instances, people who enter the country illegally are allowed to vote, which blows the mind. And then you're going to get mad because the border towns can't handle the influx. I was telling you some of these numbers. It is astronomical. Some of these numbers for this. What was it? Because we're like, what, 10 days away? I don't even think 10 days away. How many? From Title 42 being lifted.
Yeah, 9 days.
The number, Homeland Security believes that when Title 42 expires, you're going to see over 13,000 illegal immigrants crossing the border per day. Per day. That's several times larger than the city in which I was born. Per day. You have Alejandro Mayorkas. We shared with you the New York Times piece where the New York Times is actually writing how they were a little troubled that all of these kids that were being brought over by coyotes just disappeared. And then they started popping up in factories. There's like this whole racket. An adult goes in for the interview and a kid shows up for the job. Department of Homeland Security doesn't do anything. They don't track it. They don't do anything. It's going to be a disaster. And the administration, they say they're sending 1,500 active duty troops to the border ahead of Title 42 ending. They're not going to be on the border. The way that it was explained is that they're going to fill what they call critical capability gaps. Data entry, warehouse support, some ground-based detection and monitoring. They said that's until Customs and Border Patrol can address those needs through contracted support. They added that they will not be doing any law enforcement work. They said that soldiers will be armed, but only for self-defense purposes. Troops will not apprehend illegal immigrants. They will only carry out administrative work to free up Border Patrol agents to be out in the field. Well, just so you know, there haven't been a lot of Border Patrol agents doing administrative work anyway. So you're not really freeing up that much more of them. That's a joke. That's an absolute joke. Why the hell even send them in the first place? I don't want to hear the whole, oh, well, you know, they have to have more agents down there to process. Do you know how many agents are actually not doing that now because they have to be out there in the field? They act like they're going down there and relieving all of these hundreds or thousands of agents. They're not. There's not that many doing it. I know this for a fact. There's not that many doing it. That's why they process. Everybody just goes through. Oh, my gosh. Do these reporters that write these, do they not remember all of the previous things that have been written about this? It's one of the reasons. I think it was CBS that had had one of the stories that discussed how the whole issue with how quickly people would have to get processed because there weren't really a lot of staff there to do it. And so they just go. Here's your date. Come back for like a court, you know, you're with an immigration judge and it never happens. Now, I get it. They have a law from 1878 that prevents U.S. active duty military from enforcing domestic laws unless explicitly authorized by U.S. Congress. I think this is kind of interesting how Congress is like, wait a minute, we didn't authorize them from enforcing domestic laws. But wait, you don't stop the ATF who aren't allowed. I mean, they didn't stop the CDC when the CDC was trying to tell people that they didn't have to pay their rent. It's kind of the Posse Comitatus Act is the Posse Comitatus from what? 1878. Is that what it is? That's the law that states that active duty military cannot basically act as law enforcement. So I don't even know what they think is going to happen here. I don't know how they think this is going to work. Got a couple of other things that I want to make sure that we hit, too. I got really mad yesterday evening. I don't know if you were aware. It had to do with a couple of friends of mine. And if you sign up to my email newsletter over at Chapter and Verse, I wrote about this. And I thought, you know, normally I don't, we just kind of focus on, you know, real, you know, some news stuff, some culture stuff, things like that. And I explained how, you know, I know a lot of the people that that are in commentary. Some of them are good friends of mine. And I know a lot of people are really upset over the whole issue with Tucker and Fox. And I get it because I think, you know, Tucker was, he's a friend of mine. He was an absolute gem on that network. And it's just crazy how that all, it's insane how it all unfolded. And I think it's unfortunate because we are on the right are not so rich in communicators that we can just have something like this without mourning the loss of it, right? And he's one of, I think he revived the lowly television monologue. I don't think many people were paying attention to it until, I mean, they just, it just sort of fell out of favor. It fell out of vogue and he kind of brought it back, I think. And I'm friends with Brian Kilmeade, who's a very dear friend of mine. And I'm friends with Lawrence Jones, who I've known for over 10 years. He was one of the first people that we met when we moved here. I've known him since he was still in college, brought him over to the Blaze and watched as he just bloomed. I don't know how else to put it. He's a talented individual. He's willing to travel literally anywhere and put in the work. And he went to Fox, and Fox smartly put him on the air regularly. So what's happening with Tucker's show is that they have a rotating cast of guest hosts until they can figure out what's going on with that hour. And so they've had Brian Kilmeade host. They have Lawrence Jones hosting. They're going to have other people hosting. And I get it. Like I said, I think that, you know, I understand that people are angry about what had happened. But some of the stuff that I was seeing yesterday just really kind of blew the mind because people were, I think you can be upset over Tucker without defecating all over every other conservative. Of course, I didn't say it like that on Twitter because I was mad and I still am. But I don't want to get fined. So the issue, what really did it was watching, and I'm not very familiar with Carol Swain. But she was on social media yesterday and she said, quote, "I'm sure Lawrence Jones did not ask to be used as Tucker Carlson's temporary replacement. Given Jones's age and experience, it looks like a race-based affirmative action appointment that allows Fox to virtue signal." That's what she said. I found that to be abhorrent, and I don't care who the hell you are. And I called her out. I said, no, we're not doing this. We're not doing this. If anyone thinks this, they do not know how hard Lawrence has worked over the years to get where he is and to diminish all of the hard work he has done with this stroke of affirmative action. It's an insult to his years of growth, to his dedication, and to his talent. It also demonstrates how just insidious and poisonous affirmative action was in the first place, because now even when merit is present, you don't acknowledge it. And I was floored. I mean, I knew people were upset over what had happened. And like I said, you know, yeah, I totally get it because these are actual friends of mine off air and offline. I get it. I mean, but to do something like this, and it was insulting because it was an insult. I mean, to suggest that he was put on air at 7 p.m. because he's black is ignorance on her part, or it's just plain maliciousness or both. And so I thought that she would have recognized that, and she didn't. She got irrationally sanctimonious and then tried to flex because that's the hot new trend to do. When you screw up, you know, I wrote this in Grace Canceled. When you screw up, the hot new thing to do is continue to flex like a fruitcake. Instead of just like acknowledge, wow, that was, you know, I mean, we rightfully call out people who falsely accuse innocent people of racism, because to accuse somebody of such a moral failing is itself a moral failing because it ironically relies on racism itself in order to complete the accusation. And so too is to ignore a person's merit and claim that someone was chosen for a role outside of meritocracy for their skin color alone. Both are abhorrent. Now, like I said, she might have stopped and corrected herself and apologized to Lawrence, but the grace-killing hubris, which has long infected the left, has infected the right too. And I like reconciliation more than I like a reckoning. But sometimes life always doesn't give me what I want. And if I can't get one, I will take the other. So, like I said, whatever is going on with Fox and Tucker is entirely separate from suggesting that a lifelong Christian conservative, and I'll have to say, because I know a lot of these people on television, I've seen what they act like when they have a glass of wine. I've seen what they act like when they're out with friends at the bar at CPAC. Oh, yeah, I've seen some of this. Kane's seen it, too. Lawrence is one of the very few people who is exactly how he is in real life as he is on television. And I hate to say it, but there's not, I mean, every industry has its faults and everything has fallen, really. We're all a horrible bunch of people. But you'd be shocked. Just because the R is by the name or just because they can wear a cross necklace that's not given to you by angels because they think that you're so good, right? People went and bought that in a store. So my whole point is that whatever's going on with Fox and Tucker is entirely separate from suggesting that a lifelong Christian conservative got into this guest host rotation, not because of his talent, but because he's black. I mean, conflating the two to dodge responsibility for the progressive reasoning on the second doesn't fly. And I know most conservatives are better than this, but it really shocks me to see people who ought to be grown folks, people who ought to be stalwarts attacking allies for an issue which the ally had nothing to do. Lawrence didn't cause Tucker to leave. Brian didn't cause Tucker to leave. That's between Tucker and Fox. Lawrence didn't create the drama. He's doing his job. And regardless, a shot, you know, at Tucker's former hour is an honor to lesser known hosts. And Lawrence isn't undeserving. To point out that he's a good person and his experience got him a spot in guest rotation is not to deny Tucker, for the love. Golly. And he's not Tucker and he's not trying to be. And you know what? Knowing Tucker, he'd be one of the first people to congratulate whoever got it. I hate seeing good conservative people caught up in a storm that they didn't create and waylaid for nothing. And I do not like at all seeing our side allow emotions to overtake logic and our reasoning capabilities. We are not the left. Running on emotion is what the left does. It is not what we do. And when we copy them, we lose our advantage. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Muslim culture is woven throughout the American culture in music, film, literature, fashion, and the arts. And the cheer for Muslim, we cheer for Muslim athletes like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I know him, and I did mispronounce his name.
I smell toast.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know what. I think I probably would have tackled him on the stage at that point if I was a staffer. You guys, come on. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is, it's like I was telling Kane and Juan and Steve on break, is like Cher, Madonna. Everybody knows who Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is. Everybody knows. I mean, that's like one of the first words out of kids' mouths if they're into sports. Mom, dad, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, everybody knows who he is. Who doesn't? Oh, my gosh. Not Biden. Isn't that like what does that mean? The smell toast thing.
Like when you're experiencing a stroke?
Oh my gosh, are
symptoms,
you serious?
The symptoms are you smell toast. At least that's what I hear.
I did not know that.
I get
now
worried
I'm gonna freak
every time
out if I ever smell toast.
I know. Every time I make toast, I get freaked out.
Yeah, I know. I'm smelling the toast I'm making. Is this a stroke? It's a meme. Okay, so coming up in our second hour, we got, oh my gosh, I don't know how we're going to get everything in. DeSantis, he signed a bill authorizing the death penalty for child rapists. I'm all about that. This is going to be also a major Supreme Court challenge because of an existing case that was as bad as Roe v. Wade. We're going to talk about some of the mechanics of that. And we got to protect leaf blowers at all costs, a whole bunch of other stuff. Wokery, you don't want to miss. Stick with us. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
On Friday evening, a 9-year-old child was murdered along with four others in yet another shocking, horrific act of gun violence in America, this time in Cleveland, Texas. Two of the women killed were discovered on top of surviving children and appeared to be shielding them from gunfire. In all, five people were murdered by an individual armed with a powerful AR-15 style rifle. As the manhunt for the suspected assailant continues, we urge the public to heed all guidance from law enforcement officials and stay safe.
She looks like a green screen. She's dressed in green screen attire. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Top of the second hour. Can listen across the country. Can stream the show. Watch it online. Facebook, YouTube. All good discussion there. Channel 347 DirecTV. She didn't mention where the dude's from.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, why is he here? How'd he get his gun? Is he, pray tell, here lawfully? Because all signs in the magic eight ball that is all the reporting of the internet says no. Hmm. So he's not here lawfully. How did he get his quote-unquote AR style? What the, I'm so, oh my gosh, I just, I'm not even going to make it through the show without screaming. It's one of those days.
AR style?
AR style. It's like saying a Mercedes style Kia. Like, what is that? Shut up with this. They don't even understand. There's several different types of platforms. Just because it's black and looks shooty doesn't necessarily mean it's an AR-15. Anyway. Oh. But my bigger thing is why she didn't get into, like, what was the other? Because the guy has a violent history. She can't talk about that, though, because then she's got to get into his history of getting deported. Repeatedly. So here's the, we got to address this thing. So this is such a stupid headline. So this is from the Daily Beast, right? Ready? Here's the headline. Texas governor walks back statement calling shooting victims illegal immigrants. That was my best used car salesman. Get out your checkbook. I mean, that was like my. Yeah. He walks back the statement, Kane, calling shooting victims illegal immigrants. Well, why is that? Because only one of the victims had the permanent legal resident status.
Okay.
One. Okay, and? The remaining were... What does this have to... People are more upset over this than they are the fact that people were murked. What is your damage? I mean, I know people got murdered, but can you believe Abbott's words? Yes, these people were totally brutally massacred, but Greg Abbott's mouth. Jeez. That's our media and the left. And then, so the killer was here illegally. The remainder of the victims were here illegally. The media is acting like open border activists somehow successfully lobbied to get Abbott to remove any mention of legal status. They're focusing more on this than the actual murder. Wait a minute. You said murder by illegal. Can you believe he said illegal aliens? I mean, wait, the murder. But the illegal aliens, though. The words. Words are violence. Oh, and then you have Time Magazine's tweet. Oh, boy. Listen to this headline. Oh, boy. This was yesterday, friends. Quote, it's from Time Magazine. Quote, a Texas man went next door with a rifle and began shooting his neighbors, killing an 8-year-old and 4 others inside the house after the family asked him to stop firing rounds in his yard because they were trying to sleep, said authorities Saturday. A Texas man went next door. A Texas man? You're calling a dude here illegally who was deported 5 times a Texas man? Did you just dead country him? Same principle, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious. A Texas man. He's not a Texas man. Again, he is literally here illegally, and he was deported 5 times. Now, what gets me over this, even more so, because everyone's talking about the language surrounding it, although we were talking about the murder and, like, ultimately, who were the people most terrorized by illegal immigration, but the media is, and the left have been so focused on the words. They have to be so that they can, so they don't indict themselves because their policies cause these sorts of things. But they, it's the crazy thing is they also ignored the fact that the FBI, when they originally like put out the photo of this dude, the killer, it was the wrong dude. They put out the photo of the wrong dude. They had some rando whose name was kind of similar. And they put his driver's license picture out. The dude's brother had to get on social media and say, quote, that is my brother who was wrongly accused, a married man with a family and a career. This is damaging to a person. So then an hour after that, FBI Houston responded to using the wrong image and attributing it to the suspect. They made another clarification because they misspelled the name, too. As I was saying, the name was similar, I guess. They, oh my gosh, I can't even. So they, this is not the first time they got the wrong guy. Do you remember on April 5th, this was CNN. Let me open. I can't. I know. I don't like citing it either, but they have the story. The FBI and the Army and Army members raided the wrong hotel room during a training exercise and literally detained a guest. I mean, but can you spell woke, though? That's what's most important. Members of the FBI and U.S. Army Special Operations Command, they were conducting a training exercise in downtown Boston. They legit raided the wrong room and then detained the poor guest inside. Before realizing what was wrong, they realized that they messed up. This was literally just last month that this happened. They said that the exercise was meant to enhance their skills. No one was injured. Oh, thankfully. They said that the person who was in the hotel room and detained by federal law enforcement was an employee with Delta Air. Can you imagine Delta Air, a flight not taking off on time because somebody... Wait, how do you go into the wrong room? When you're doing a training exercise. Because the easiest part is to making sure that the information is correct, right? Especially if it's a training exercise. But the point is that this is not the first time this has happened. Then they had to actually tweet that they were mistakenly sent to the wrong room and they detained an individual, not the intended role player. I really want to know how long it took them to figure out that it was actually a person and not the role player. I wonder if they're like, this is great acting. So good. This is like a Barry situation with Bill Hader. This is like this would be like an episode from that. So here is not the first time. So this, by the way, the civilian dude was a pilot, by the way. When I say Delta Airlines employee, it was a pilot. You know, the person who flies the plane was that guy, the pilot. They cuffed him and everything. What if he had to go fly a plane? Can you imagine? I'm caught in a training exercise. They had cuffed him, interrogated him, and put him in a shower before they realized that it was a mistake. Wow. So it was a bit. If you're wondering how long it took them to realize, A bit. A little bit. Interrogated, put him in a shower. Oh my gosh. But hey, everybody's mad at Greg Abbott because Greg Abbott literally said the correct thing. But one person, Dana. One person. People were murked. Stop dodging. Golly. Now, we were telling you how the administration is considering sending, well, they are sending all these people down to the border. That, you know, but I don't know why, because Karine Jean-Pierre just said it's down by 90%. Why do they need to send anybody down there in the first place? I just don't know. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. Not at all. So, one of the things we're going to be discussing here coming up is this story that has to do with Governor Ron DeSantis. He signed this bill authorizing the death penalty for child rapists. And I am so glad for this. It's going to challenge this Supreme Court case, which we're going to talk about here coming up. It's going to challenge Kennedy versus Louisiana. This was a decision in 2008. And I remember that was the first year I was on radio. And it was, I just remember looking at the specifics of this case and trying to figure out how in the world I was going to talk about something so horrific on air, because it involved the absolutely brutal rape of an 8-year-old girl who required surgery. Her injuries were so significant. It's like, oh my gosh. And the response that DeSantis had, because it's going to intentionally challenge this 5-4 Kennedy v. Louisiana decision. And that decision prohibited the death penalty in cases when the victim survived. Now, from that 2008 case, and we're going to talk with Carrie Severino here coming up, because she was clerking for Clarence Thomas at the time. She was there when all of this was happening. And she said it was really troubling because at one point, I think it was Justice Breyer or Justice Stevens, I'll look at here. But she had said at one point that there was this questioning to determine exactly, you know, okay, so how injured was the individual? Well, was it permanent? Was it a permanent injury? It was Justice Stevens. She said that he asked this really whacked out question to the assistant DA to clarify that this 8-year-old gruesome rape victim didn't have any permanent injury. And he was trying to figure out whether or not, you know, it would be considered cruel and unusual punishment to have death penalty for a child rapist if the 8-year-old was not permanently injured after. I mean, because we're going to talk about the mechanics of the case with her. It was so bad. I need you to understand this. This is what we're dealing with, and you need to understand it. It is a savage. The details are necessary because this was one of the determinations brought into the reasoning for whether or not death penalty could be allowed. The victim, I'll give you a moment in case you... The victim was so brutally raped, her perineal opening, vaginal opening, rectum, everything was torn. Her interior was literally partially separated from her cervix, which allowed the rectum to protrude into her female copulatory region. They had to have invasive emergency surgery immediately. And Justice Stevens at one point had said, quote, could you just clarify, were the injuries permanent? And what a horrifying question. And they were trying to argue at the time, there were some of the liberal justices that seemed to be pushing towards the idea that, yeah, there's a lot of bad, horrible things that have happened, you know, prior that weren't eligible for the death penalty. Then Scalia interrupted and said, no, that's inaccurate. It's historical that absolutely they did execute people for those things. And they finally had to get Breyer to agree to that. We're going to talk to Carrie Severino about this because this is going to challenge that case. It is a huge case. And it's as bad, honestly, as Roe v. Wade. I think the logic is as bad as Roe v. Wade. And it's going to be a major challenge of this case. We're going to talk to Carrie Severino about this because this is coming. This is absolutely going to happen. You've heard me talk about my friends at Kel-Tec for years, and it's because I really believe in them as a company and as innovators. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond, like with the Kel-Tec P50, a revolutionary award-winning pistol that packs a punch in a compact package. The Kel-Tec P50 is perfect for home defense, for range shooting, or just even having some fun. And with its top-mounted Picatinny rail, you can easily attach your favorite optics or accessories to make it truly yours. Whether you are a seasoned shooter or you're just starting out, the Kel-Tec P50 is the perfect pistol for anyone looking for power and precision in a compact and easy-to-use package. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond. Learn more about the P50 pistol at KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, well, all of the writers in Hollywood for film and TV are going on strike beginning today, throwing Hollywood in turmoil. The Writers Guild of America called its first work stoppage in 15 years. They failed to reach an agreement for higher pay from studios like Walt Disney and Netflix. They said that the company's behaviors created a gig economy inside of a union workforce, the WGA said in a statement on its website. Now, to that point, late night comedy shows have shut down because no one's there to write their funny ha-ha lines for them. It actually might be the best thing that's ever happened. I don't know that I oppose this. IBM said it could replace 7,800 employees, roughly, with AI. Learn to code. International Business Machines, IBM, their CEO said that the company is expecting to pause their hiring for jobs that he says could be done with AI. He says that hiring in back office jobs will be slowed down in the coming year. 30% of the 26,000 jobs being replaced by AI. So that's about 7,800 would be lost. Oh boy. Wow. I'm telling you, there's going to be some realignment. A 70-year-old bearded man wins a women's poker tournament. Was that you, Kane? No. Okay. It was in Florida. A 70-year-old man won the World Poker Tour ladies event in Florida. He signed up for the female-only contest because he could pretend to identify a woman because they allow anything nowadays, he said. He did it just to make a point. So I think it's actually kind of funny. Also, the New York police, they're busy searching for a guy who pooped on two pride flags. Oh, my goodness. Get your hate crimes task force out to investigate hate crimes. I mean, normally it would be like public defecation, and that's gross no matter what. But specifically because it's an alphabet flag. It's aggravated harassment. So they're looking at the guy who pooped on two flags. I mean, you know, sometimes it happens. Up next, there's no good way to segue. So we've been discussing this Kennedy v. Louisiana case. This is what DeSantis signed into law in Florida, the child rapist death penalty that could challenge this case. We'll talk to Carrie Severino next.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
12, and so we think that that decision was wrong. We think that in the worst of the worst cases, the only appropriate punishment is the ultimate punishment. And so this bill sets up a procedure to be able to challenge that precedent and to be able to say that in Florida, we think that the worst of the worst crimes deserve the worst of the worst punishment.
And that was the announcement that the governor made yesterday when he signed what lawmakers gave him and what he also advocated for, a bill that authorizes the death penalty for convicted child rapists. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast in a market near you. You can stream the radio program. You can also watch the simulcast of the program, Facebook, YouTube, or Channel 347 Direct TV. Now, this law, which permits capital punishment for people who commit sexual battery against children under 12 years old, this calls into question a Supreme Court case. And that's a 2008 case, Kennedy versus Louisiana, which prohibited the death penalty in the cases where the victim survived. And I know it seems a little, that seems kind of crazy because child rape, it's, I mean, there's, there were, it's just, it's appalling. And you have a victim who relives it every single day of their life. And especially if there's permanent damage, which brings me to a tweet that I had seen yesterday that was retweeted into my timeline from Carrie Severino. And the tweet was, she was explaining how she was clerking for Justice Thomas when this case was being determined in 2008. And there was, she related this horrific Q&A where Justice Stevens was asking about that, the permanent injury. And we, for the sake of not having to, so we can look, focus on the mechanics here, we were talking a little bit about the severity of what happened to this victim in this case. It's just, it's a horrific thing. Carrie Severino joins us now via the phone, and she is with JCN, and she's also the co-author of the best-selling book, Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Court. We've had her on the program before. Carrie, so good to have you back. I thought your timeline was incredibly insightful, because this does set up a pretty significant Supreme Court challenge if the Supreme Court hears it. So with Kennedy versus Louisiana, do you think do you believe that maybe that the court is going to hear this? Is there a hesitancy, do you think? Because it doesn't mean it's a guarantee, even if it challenges it.
Yes, although I think in this case, it's going to be the type of case that the Supreme Court would want to hear. Because what would happen is if someone challenges this law, that a state's law would be struck down. And there are some times when it's like, okay, well, one circuit's interpreting some federal statute a little different than another, but they might wait until it becomes a deeper or more serious issue with the conflict before they take it. In this kind of case where we have a state that's presumably going to have its law struck down, I think they feel like they have to take it to make sure that there's not that's only happening when it's absolutely correct. And as you point out, this is a case that I think there is a real question as to whether the underlying case is correct, saying that you simply can't have the death penalty in a case of child rape, when it's very clear that in the early years of our republic, when the Eighth Amendment was passed, when it said no cruel, unusual punishment, they did not view punishing someone who had committed, in this case, I mean, it was a brutal, brutal rape of this man's, I think it was stepdaughter, 8 years old, really shocking, had to have emergency surgery to repair some of the physical damage, really outrageous. So the idea that this somehow our founding fathers would not have thought that was totally appropriate, that's not cruel and unusual, that is justice in that case.
Yes.
It's just not true.
Yeah, and you noticed this as well. We're talking with Carrie Severino. You can find her on Twitter at JCN Severino. You noted that you were horrified. You said, I still remember being horrified when Justice Stevens asked a bizarre question to the assistant district attorney to clarify that the 8-year-old gruesome rape victim didn't have any permanent injury. That was sort of the reasoning that some of those who wanted to ban the death penalty for being used in this, they thought that you had to have permanent injury in order to substantiate that penalty.
Yeah, I mean, hello, permanent injury. It's hard to even begin, especially as a mother with daughters. You know, but anyone can imagine. Is there? How could you not have permanent injury? And of course, that was part of the response, was like, of course, I mean, yes, eventually she was able to recover from her physical injuries. Although, I don't believe there weren't even longstanding repercussions just to the surgery alone. But the idea that raping a child like that would not result in permanent injury is insane and you know, heartless.
Yes. And I love that you noted that Justice Breyer was forced to admit that there were a lot of horrible crimes that, you know, had been, you know, they even that hadn't for the prior 43 years, at least, you said, been eligible for the death penalty. And how Scalia jumped in to note, yeah, actually, they did. They did execute people for those things. And Breyer had to agree. Yes, they actually did. That's correct. It was very, you said it was a very revealing moment, which I mean, I was fascinated by your timeline, because it really gave insight into, you know, what kind of interpretation Breyer and some of these other justices were embracing. But now when we look at the makeup of the court, it has changed. And it's interesting that those who were dissenting, you know, there's still some of those justices there, whereas the others, they're no longer on the bench. So this could be a very different outcome.
Absolutely. I mean, Justice Alito wrote the dissent, the Chief Justice, Justice Thomas, are all still at the court. And it's really a clash of two different ways to look at this. I mean, so we have the Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment, right? What does that mean? Does it mean what it meant when it was passed? If so, it's clear that not just child rape, but there's a lot of things at the time they would have said, you know, yeah, those are serious punishments. But that's not what we're talking about. They were talking about things like drawing and quartering and torture, you know, things that, that now we can't even imagine a modern country doing. But that was the kind of stuff happening in England that they were responding to, right? So they were talking about something very differently. Now you've got this other version, which Justice Breyer was embracing there, but which the Kennedy versus Louisiana opinion embraced. And there are still justices who say, well, yeah, but that's a moving target. That's a changing standard. So if now we have more and more states that are saying, well, maybe you can't have the death penalty for rape. Maybe you can't have it for child rape. Maybe you can't have it for these things. Their idea is once enough states or as many states as they feel like, because there's no real clear number, once we feel like, well, we've moved beyond that, now it's unconstitutional. And that's a very different way of looking at it. I think you can amend the Constitution. We certainly could say it, make that a different standard and say we don't want any death penalty. But you have to amend it. You don't get a justice to just say, I think that's beyond the pale. I don't think we should be able to do that. That's not how our Constitution is amended.
We're talking with Carrie Severino with JCN. You mentioned the changing standards. As I've seen it discussed on, you know, some left sites as well who've been noting this, the evolving standard of decency. I kind of find that weird in the society that we have that people would make an appeal to that the evolving standard of decency, considering, you know, some of the stuff that we're dealing with, for instance, in classrooms, etc. Really, we're gonna cite that as a reason to not approach this.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that I think Justice Scalia brought up in the arguments as well of like, well, in that theory, what if countries said, hey, you know, we're going to eliminate the death penalty for certain crimes, and then they went back the other way. Now, do you take that into consideration as well?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a real problem because what the people on the one side of this case want to do is create this one-way ratchet because they just want to get rid of it altogether. And okay, fine, that's a fine policy position to have, but this is not a legitimate way to go about that process, is to say, well, my view is the evolved way of looking. You know, it's like, I'm so enlightened. No, we'll look at and see what the Constitution actually says. And again, you can make an argument for let's amend that. And you can make an argument if you're a citizen of Louisiana and say, you know, I don't think our state should punish raping an underage child so brutally that she has to have emergency. I don't think that should be punished with the death penalty. Fine, make that argument. But don't try to make the judges import their own personal decisions into the actual language of the Constitution.
There were some that were criticizing the change. From what I understand, the law that was signed requires an 8-4 decision to impose the death penalty instead of a unanimous vote once the defendant has been convicted. Is that, how significant of a change is that? Because I see some people who I don't know if they're just overreacting or if this is like a serious, you know, what is your thought on that? Because previously it had been a unanimous vote in order to carry this out. Now it's an 8-4. I would just think something as serious as child rape. I mean, usually these cases are not, I've never seen a case that's been incorrect. I mean, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I wanted to get your thoughts.
Well, you know, You do have to obviously make sure that we are including due process rights for those accused, because as horrible as child rape is, it's also be horrible to be falsely accused of that, whether you're executed or not. Right. So we want to make sure there are extra safeguards. And so generally there are, when you have a criminal or a capital potential offense here, it has often a higher standard. And I think there are some arguments back and forth of it doesn't say in the Constitution it has to be unanimous, but historically it often has been. And so I think there are people who will make arguments back and forth of whether there is an implication that you do have to have a unanimous jury for that. So that's a separate question. I think it's very clear that at the founding era, again, this and a lot of other horrific crimes, and some crimes that today we would be kind of like, oh, we wouldn't want to have the death penalty for that. That was the backdrop that they were operating on. So they wanted to limit what they would have called cruel and unusual punishments, but that doesn't necessarily mean never using the death penalty. In fact, they would have definitely had the death penalty for a lot of cases. And it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever our 21st century views are is what, you know, the founders were doing in the 18th century. So we have to, you know, our states can have the flexibility where the Constitution doesn't set limits. The states do have the flexibility to make those choices. And so they can choose to have it or not to, but the Constitution shouldn't be invoked to limit the states in ways that are just not there in the document itself.
That's a great point with all of this. Last question. We're talking with Carrie Severino with JCN. I know I'm going to be fascinated in watching how the court handles this and how this is argued and what decision they come to when it happens. And so that's the big question. How long does it take before, because they're from what I understand, they're going to have to grant, for a review of the ruling, et cetera, and then go forward from there. So what does a timeline potentially look like on something like this?
Well, this is, you know, any Supreme Court case is a long timeline. Because, like, if they accept a case in, you know, January, they might not hear it till the following fall, and then they might not hear the case till the subsequent June. We're talking even longer out than that, though, because this is a law that hasn't yet even been challenged, to my knowledge. I think it will be, but I don't think they've even started the case. So what would happen is you'd have to challenge that case. It's going to have to go through a trial court. That decision could take, you know, who knows, years, right?
Wow.
And then an appeals court has to decide it. Those could take a huge range of length of time, too. And then the Supreme Court would have to take it. So now, in a case like this, you can imagine it going quickly, because it is, the Supreme Court precedent is very clear and binding. I mean, what Florida has done is clearly contrary to the decision in Kennedy versus Louisiana. So you don't have to do a lot of fact-finding, a lot of details. You can just say, oh, look, the Supreme Court said you can't do this, you can't do this. Then pass it on up. And then the 11th Circuit, the Court of Appeals, is going to say, oh, yep, the Supreme Court said you can't do it. Pass that up. So I think it would go faster than a typical, but we still could be talking about years before the Supreme Court would actually rule.
It's so good to see some of these challenged, some of these cases challenged, because, I mean, you know, there can be bad rulings. I mean, argued like Roe was, you know, bizarrely argued on a privacy issue, which was, I still will never understand how that even passed the muster, but, you know, it did. So it's good to see some of these being challenged. And of course, we'll see how this plays out. But I so enjoyed your insight into this, because that had to have been a bizarre thing to go through. You're listening, you know, you're listening and following this case. You're clerking for Justice Thomas, and you have justices asking, well, were they permanently damaged though? Because then, you can have permanent damage without actually seeing it or having it physically. So that was, I'm so glad that you noted that. Carrie Severino, JCN Severino on Twitter. Always so good to have you. Thank you so much, Carrie, for your insight into this.
All right. Have a good day, Dana.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So I got to tell you, one of my favorite gifts out there is the one where, you know, Oprah was telling everybody, you get a free car, you get a free car, but they changed it to bees. Like, it's bees. And then somebody like actually put in bees flying everywhere. And all these women are screaming and crying because they all got new cars, except on the video, it looks like it's bees. Anyway, that's the first thing that I thought of when I saw this headline. A crash unleashes 1 million bees onto a Florida highway. Now, my first thought was, oh my gosh, are these honeybees? It doesn't say. I think it is because beekeepers were there. This was in Jacksonville. We have got to protect our honeybees at all costs. Like, I will fight any insect for a honeybee. I will protect all honeybees. So a semi-truck was hauling these beehives, crashed early Tuesday, and it released all these bees. I mean, oh. And it was a home to a million of them. And it was in Baldwin, outside of Jacksonville city limits. Nobody was hurt except the hives. And all these confused bees were gathering around the truck. So beekeepers had to unload the intact hives into another truck. They had to later reopen the highway. I'm so glad that they took care, because the world is going to go to hell if we lose our honeybees. I swear to you, I saved a honeybee out of the pool the other day. I mean, I totally did. I was like, I will drown myself to save this bee, because they pollinate. I feel very strongly about pollination. Anyway, I can't. Oh my gosh. Okay, I got to do this one. I was on the fence as to whether I was going to talk about this. I got a couple of them here. Hang on. All right. First off, this Florida man created an actual, this is amazing and I want it, a jet ski scooter to ride onto the road. And the crazy thing is, because of the way that the shadow is, you can't see the wheels and it looks like he's floating. And I love it. He literally made a jet ski scooter and he rides around on jet in Jacksonville. And he said if he tried to put it in the water, it would sink because there's a giant hole in the bottom. So it's just for the road. It's actually kind of, it's like road legal, isn't it road legal?
It looks like.
Yeah. And a Florida woman, we'll talk more about this tomorrow, she's suing over a male-only admission policy at a clothing optional gay resort. why would you want to go to that sausage fest? I don't know. All right, stick with us. We got more to come.
Last week, the president signed an executive order authorizing the use of the National Guard at the southern border in support of counter-narcotics efforts. Can you explain, was that a precursor to today's announcement on the troops?
I'm not gonna get into the timeline of it. As you know, we've been making preparations ahead of the lifting of Title 42. We've been very clear about that. You've heard from the Department of State, DHS as well, on what they had a press conference to lay out what that's going to look like. So there's been many processes and plans that have been put into place. Don't have any specifics to any timeline that you're asking.
She doesn't have any specifics. We have no idea. We're sending troops to the border. We still don't know. I mean, psychs and stuff and things, you know, just like, I don't know. Like what? Oh, well, come on. First off, welcome back to the program. Kane and I are just a... We're trying, man. We both feel like Sam Jackson in the final scene, which ultimately was the first scene of one of the final scene of Pulp Fiction where they're in the diner. And he's like, listen here, Ringo. I want you to get my wallet out of that bag. And then he tells him, he relates to him how he's trying really, really hard to be the shepherd. We feel like that today, listening to this stuff. First off, welcome back. Again, top of our third hour. You can listen coast to coast, watch the, listen to it streaming as well, and you can watch the simulcast of the radio program on Facebook, YouTube, and then, of course, don't forget DirecTV, channel 347. We have that as well. So this... sound, this is just, I mean, because they just had the White House press briefing, Karine Jean-Pierre, and she said a number of things. First, she has no timeline for this. She has no timeline for how this is, you know, they're sending troops to the border, but she doesn't want to get into the timeline, which is kind of weird. Why wouldn't you want to? She's not here to answer questions at the question and answer session of the White. Then why even go out and talk to... What does she do? I mean, you can't just run through talking points and then be like, I can't give you any answers. I just don't know. That was, can you also gear up the, what I dropped? Okay, because guys, I'm afraid to play this for our audience. Okay, you guys got to promise me, you're not going to throw a phone. You're not going to get mad. It's one of those things where what she's telling you is opposite of what you know to be true with your own bank account. So I just want to preface this. Let's all take, we'll get some Enya going. We'll get you calmed down after this. Just go ahead and play. Go ahead.
Real wages are higher than any than they were just 9 months ago.
What? I'm sorry.
Real wages? Does she know what real wages means?
No.
Does she have a clue what real wages
means? She doesn't know how to pronounce emeritus. She pronounced it emeritus. No. No, she does. She acted like it was a fungal infection. No.
Don't forget about the Nordstrom pipeline.
No, the Nordstrom pipeline. Oh, my gosh. Is there one? Because I would love just a direct stream of purchases right to my home. Right? Oh, my gosh. Pipeline got clogged because of the sale.
What in the world?
I do not. No, I just...
Wait a minute, so...
That's not... I don't think she... Like, to your point, I don't think she understands what real wages are.
I don't
are.
Think she does either, but if I'm in the press corps and I'm not saying anything after she says that, I'm complicit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah, she is no... I mean, because with inflation, I mean, it's pretty much... Like, your wages are almost, like, getting to the point where we're cutting stuff in half. That's your... After that, after what the invisible tax of inflation, that's your real wage.
Right.
That's your real wage. How in the world do you argue that real wages are up when inflation is so high? How do you argue that? Did people go out and were everybody getting raises? Did y'all get raises to offset it? Oh, you didn't? Real wages aren't up. That's not what real wages are. Oh my gosh.
Are you seeing, like, this is a pattern now I've been seeing more consistently, especially lately. Mm-hmm. We just had audio that we played earlier in the show of KJP when you're talking about illegal migration, how it's somehow down 90%.
Where are they getting Biden these figures? I would can
That's
you imagine your job? Can you imagine you just walk out, hi, guys. Today the economy is amazing. Everyone has a job. The border is closed. What else? Let's see here. The Cowboys just actually won a Super Bowl. Like, what else? Could just go, just to say things that you know are not true and know that people are going to run cover for you. No one's going to talk about any of the sound bites that we're playing here. You're not going to, it's not going to be on NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, none of those. Oh my gosh. I just can't. It's just, apparently also the camera operator will not take the camera off Peter Doocy.
Really?
Yeah, like it was on the whole time. And it looked like he was fixing to be smart alecky. He's fixing, just saying. Just, woo. I have to say one other, let's see, we have this. I know there's a lot of headlines in the newspapers about the Met Gala. I don't care. Do you care about it?
Nope.
I don't care about it. The only thing I cared about, in fact, the only headline that matters was the cockroach that appropriately ran onto the, I guess, the red carpet, whatever, and stole the show. And a photographer actually photographed it and then tried to, it and smushed it. Kevin Mazur was the celebrity photographer. A cockroach legit ran out onto the area where all of the stars were showing up. And I don't even know why, because you have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to go. Even if you get an invite, you have to pay. Remember, AOC she begged for an invitation. Begged. And then she didn't pay anybody back when they, you know, when they, for her crappy dress, like tax the rich, whatever. Didn't pay anybody back. And now here you have the cockroach running out. Do you see it? Did you see it? Are you just dying?
Hold on.
Oh my gosh. So it ran out and they were taking pictures of it. And I don't know. The whole thing is goofy. It was all, I guess they were honoring Karl Lagerfeld, who was a very non-woke dude who designer. I think it's funny because he's non-woke. None of these people would associate with him. If he did not have the pedigree with fashion that he did, he would have been canceled already. But he has blank you credibility because he's been in fashion since he was like a baby. Now he's dead. But I mean, they would have totally canceled him because he hated everyone. He hated fat chicks. He hated everything. He would say it like that. And anybody else would say it and they would be canceled. I'm not kidding. It was hysterical. They were terrified of him because I think he was immortal. I don't know. It was like a vampire or something. He was older than dirt and he had been in fashion for forever. And this dude would have been canceled. It's so funny. Yeah, they got a cockroach out there. It's just so appropriate.
I love how the cockroach got more attention than the Met Gala itself.
Who are you wearing? Who are you wearing? Rick Owens? No, anyway. Sorry. I don't dislike him, but I just, oh man. All right, so what else? I know, because I was looking for one. Can we please talk about the leaf blower thing here real quick? First, they came for these sulfites in your phosphates in your dish soap, right? They came for that. Now, and then they came for your gas ovens. Now they want your leaf blowers. Here's USA Today. Gas leaf blowers and lawnmowers are shockingly bad for the planet. Bans are beginning to spread. Advocates say that using a commercial gas leaf blower for an hour produces emissions equal to driving from Denver to L.A. That is such a lie. This is so stupid. So now they're going, I want to go and buy a ton of gas-powered leaf blowers, and I want to leave them all in my driveway, and I just want to turn them all on. You know,
if you're looking for a future Christmas gift for me, I'll take a leaf blower.
And then people are like, they're noisy. Like this one chick, she passed the Washington, D.C.'s ban on gas powered leaf blowers. She was remarking on the absence of the noisy blowers. It's already being felt in Washington. She says, quote, you used to hear them all day everywhere you went, and now you don't. What did you think they got the leaves up with? Magic? Oh, my gosh. I just can't believe that I'm seeing people out here manicuring the city. I thought it woke up like this. I don't even care. I actually want everything to just, I want the planet to fall apart sooner rather than later because I can't stand it. That's why when I see these people that are doing stuff like live forever, no, because I hate so many of you. No, not you guys, but everybody else. No. Oh my gosh. Yes, Kane.
More what? KJP audio. Remember we were just talking about her lying about
it's
the
about 90, leaf blowers?
90%. No, but possibly those who handle landscaping.
Shut up.
What?
No.
I thought you
Is she going down that road?
Trying to
Is she going down the road I'm thinking that she's
going
to
well,
go down?
She's not going down that road, but she's doubled down on the 90% number. Doubled down. I have to hear it.
How do you, yeah,
I have
please,
to hear
let's
it.
Go ahead.
You
go ahead.
Said yesterday that when it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%. Where did that number come from?
It was,
because
I was speaking.
CBP is telling us the number is.
I hear you. I'm about to answer.
136,000 people more.
I'm about to answer
this
you.
Year so
if
far.
You, if you, if the dramatics could come down just a little bit.
Oh my gosh, Kane, stop it right here. I can't make it through. First off, he asked her a question. Girl, he asked you a question. He asked her a question. That is not dramatics. If you can answer on the dramatics, he's asking you a question. If you think that's dramatic, then maybe you're too sensitive for this job. Okay, go ahead.
I'm about to answer
you.
If the dramatics could come down just a little bit. If the dramatics could come down a little
what's
bit.
What's dramatic about asking a question about?
Okay, I'm going to answer. So I was speaking to the parolee program. As you know, the president put in place a parolee program to deal with certain countries on ways that we can limit illegal migration. And we have seen, the data has shown us that it has gone down by more than 90%.
The heck is she talking about?
What? That's not true. I'm going to get a leaf blower. You know what? When she gets up at the podium, I just want to get out there. The leaf blower. Just look around with my leaf blower. Come and get it, government. Come and get my leaf blower. Come and take it. Oh my gosh. None of that's worked. None of what she's forevermore. By the way, they really are going after the lawn and garden equipment. For greeny stuff. Do you know that? I love this headline. What's the downside of electric lawn equipment? Well, they suck.
Yeah. You get 10 minutes worth of equipment.
Oh, great. I love that I got 3 seconds of leaf blowing. Right. Let's go charge it for another 25,000 hours. Yay!
Progress.
Nobody likes it. I always get disappointed with the electric. Like, you know, the stuff that I got. I would love to just add gas and everything, including my vacuum cleaner. I don't even care. Although my electric, you know, comes from coal-powered plants, so I am using some fossil fuels there, so I feel good about it. But, oh my gosh, I can't. These clean air advocates, they also made a big, this is actually one of the most awful things I've read. In this USA Today piece, they were talking about how, oh, well, they're giving the lawn care workers money so they can switch to battery-powered equipment. Oh my gosh, first world absolute limousine liberal entitlement.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So this is actually amazing. New York Post has the story of this Washington State teenager who rolled to prom in a World War II army tank. He's super crafty. His name is Sherman Bynum. He's a student at a high school near the Oregon border. He rented the M3A1 Stuart tank for $1,000. He raised the money through TikTok and GoFundMe. He goes, we don't like normal very much. And he says, live your life to your fullest. Do what you want. He rolled up in a tank. I think it's actually amazing. That's how they showed up in prom. That's amazing. I love that they did that. Kudos to them. I'm like, gun grabbers would have immediately like tried to swat them or something. A crazy dust storm in South Central Illinois caused a car crash, killing 6 and closed down the highway. This is awful. It's on I-55. Crazy dust storm. It was shut down in both directions in South Central Illinois as police reported multiple crashes with injuries and fatalities during a crazy dust storm. There is some video of it, and it looks like a crazy horror movie fog. It was really bad. East Palestine residents are still suffering. They're experiencing lesions, stomach pain, shortness of breath since the train derailment that we were told was totally fine and nothing was going to happen. The photos are actually really bad. There's photos of it. It's really bad. They said that they can't go out in the creeks. They can't do anything yet because of the chemicals that they said they're still being affected by all of this. And a man catfishing in Missouri snagged a 4-foot prehistoric fish instead.
Dang.
That's wild. I would have known that. Yeah, conservation said that it was some 4-foot lake sturgeon. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Someone would say, as we heard about 10, that if a person exposes themselves to a minor online, it's a felony, and that it is, the words were, unjust for it to only be a misdemeanor. The exposure online is a felony because of a policy choice. That's not some written in stone pre-existing happened with the Big Bang fact. We chose that. We could have chosen, I wasn't here for the debate, so I can't say should have, but we could have chosen to align the offenses at the misdemeanor level. And we're being asked, members, as part of the justification to do anything other than adopt L008, we're being asked to consider that this offense, if done online, is a felony, but it's only, and I say only gently, because the consequences of a misdemeanor sex offense charge and or conviction are severe. But we're being asked to consider that it's only a misdemeanor for one and a felony for the other.
What? And it will happen toast crunch, how am I
again and
to?
Again that I'll
who knows?
Try this to reframe this
Colorado Democrat is arguing that the penalty for exposing yourself to a minor online should be reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor because of equity.
Quit excusing it.
Yeah, quit excusing groomers. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this. Third hour. Dana Lashier with you. See, you can't have me as president of the United States ever because I would be like, well, we need a drone strike. That would be my answer for everything. Ma'am, you mean, yeah, drone strike that offender. Bzz, get him. You play games, right? Get them. I mean, that's... See, that's why I can't run. That's why I can't run. I also need to play this audio soundbite. Speaking of really... Because see, while Florida is like, no, we're going to kill them. Colorado's like, maybe we should just reduce the penalty for exposing yourself to kids online to a misdemeanor. Mm. Well, now in Louisiana, this woman is testifying to... we may not be able to pull it up, but I was going to say, I'll definitely put it in your prep. It's HB 463, which bans pediatric gender mutilation. She says apparently that she knew her daughter was a boy because her food choices were always raw grain vegetables. I'm not making this up. Listen.
Had anxiety and would never sleep, and we couldn't figure out what the problem was. We took him to specialists and neurologists, and he had brain scans trying to figure out why he couldn't sleep. Then as he grew, he got to sleeping, but his food choices were odd. They were always like green vegetables, raw green vegetables, which if you know kids, most kids don't like to eat those things. And then the precocious puberty. Those things, once we figured out that he was transgender, when he came to us and told us that he was transgender, when we went back and realized that the pattern of everything that he had experienced as a child, including eating green vegetables, because that boosts testosterone, were just methods of his body trying to become.
She knew her daughter was a boy because she always had raw green vegetables. Somebody on Twitter said, fellas, if your girlfriend's eating vegetables, she is actually a dude and you are gay. Your girlfriend's gay. She having salad?
Dang.
She's a dude, and you're a gay man. There was another woman. I'm not going to play it. This is just some of this hearing. She says she had a gut feeling her daughter was a boy when she liked to play with boy toys when she was 18 months old. So they're going to start gender affirming. I think these women are nuts. I think they're nuts and they want attention and they want the, oh, you're going through a thing, backpats. That's what I do. I do absolutely think that. I think it's the moms that are nuts. This is some mommy dearest BS is what it is. This is some nutty stuff. Good heavens. I got so much we got to talk about. And I'm going to try to pack as much in as I possibly can. I've got wokery as well that I want to make sure we get into. And with this, first off, this is an interesting story. I hate the source because it's a stupid progressive source and I'm not mentioning them because I can't stand them. So they have this story of this server at an Ohio restaurant who was forced to serve a dinner party that they claim was decked out. And this is apparently it was in Daily Beast. Daily Beast reported it also, so I don't have to go by the original super lefty thing. It was a black server who was forced to wait on diners that they said were decked out in Confederate flag gear, and he said that they were casually tossing around racial slurs. That's what he told the Daily Beast on Monday. And it was in Ohio. The dude, Arthur Mandy, said he's torn over his job. He said it was at a Texas roadhouse, but he said that he was he didn't want to serve those people, and there was a woman in the restaurant who said it was tense. And they apparently there's a video of it. There's like video of it uploaded, but I don't like to play TikTok stuff. So they said that the table never spoke to the server or gave him eye contact, and they said that they weren't even trying to be quiet. There was just a lot of racial slurs, and they had some stuff up on video on TikTok, and it is wild, and it's a Cincinnati area server, Cincinnati area, I guess, roadhouse, Texas roadhouse. Now here's the thing. The left, this is what we were trying to tell you, the stuff that would happen if you force people to bake the cake. Remember that whole thing? Oh, yeah. Bake the cake, bigot, bake the cake. Over these alphabet activists targeting bakeries and demanding that they do stuff. I don't think anybody should be forced to serve anyone. I don't think this guy... I mean, but that's what the left wanted. I don't think this guy should have to do that. Yeah, you're like, but Dana, that's his job. I don't think that as an establishment should. I think that they have the right of association or right of who they want to serve. I'm consistent in this. I don't think they should have had to. I don't think this guy should. I think that Texas Roadhouse would have been completely within their rights to say if they didn't want to, if this guy felt uncomfortable, get out. Private business. But the left wanted everybody to bake the cake. They insisted otherwise. No, no, no. And we warned you. We warned you. We said, look, you will have a situation where somebody is going to come up against somebody else. And this person is going to be ridiculous. And they're going to be, bigot or whatever. And you're not going to want to be forced into service for this other person just because that the excuse of it being a business or commercial setting. You want to be able to control your right of association, your right of service, your labor is your labor. But that's not what the left wanted. That is not what the left wanted at all. They demanded that everybody, you have to bake the cake. Everybody must be served. Okay, so now what do you say to this situation? For all the bake the cake people, what do you say to that situation? I mean, I don't think you should have to do it, but this is what we warn people about. You had this Indiana bar. They're still begging for customers. The Fairfax Bar and Grill in Bloomington, though, they're still begging people to come back. Earlier, they said any customer that wanted to speak out about the controversial partnership would be immediately asked to pay their bill and leave. Oh, but then nobody showed up. And so they said that. They said they'll be asked to pay and leave. And then now they walk back their comments. And they said that because there was some backlash. And they said, no, we just meant like if you can't play nice, get out of the sandbox. That goes to everyone. We're not going to censor anyone. But, you know, we require civility. Disagreement isn't incivility. I know that that's something that the left believes in, but that's it's not the same thing. Disagreement is not being uncivil. It's not incivility. So they are begging for people to come. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what happens when you decide to mess around like this. There's also this story. Let me pull this up. Philadelphia Inquirer has a story of Thomas Jefferson, president, who is in trouble because he liked some tweets. Mm-hmm. The chief executive officer of Thomas Jefferson University said he was disappointed in the president, Mark Tikosinski's careless use of his Twitter account, in which he liked tweets that questioned the science of the Rona vaccines, and gender reassignment surgery as child mutilation. Somebody had to go through. This dude is a Yale-educated molecular immunologist, and he's worked at Thomas Jefferson University for 16 years. The CEO of Thomas Jefferson University had to have gone to his account and looked at what he was liking. Stalker much? He liked some tweets, guys. And so they were going after his like history. He liked some tweets. So he wrote this email to this the chief executive officer, this individual, Joseph Caccioni, wrote this email over the weekend, all the faculty, the employees, and the students. And he was explaining that, oh, he's got a troubling like history on his Twitter account, and he's so disappointed, and it's a careless use. Oh, my goodness. And he said that he's liked all these tweets about how the injection was ineffective, et cetera, et cetera. And he started counting the number of likes. He actually counted up the number of likes on opinions with whom he disagreed. And for his part, Tikosinski, who's 70, told the Philadelphia Inquirer that he liked tweets to bookmark them. I do that too sometimes. That's how you can bookmark them that way. And he goes, I regret how my lack of understanding caused some to question my views. Don't apologize. It's the FUD who doesn't understand how Twitter works, who thinks that if you like something, then you're endorsing it. Like is not an endorsement. A lot of people use it for bookmarking. And he wrote a letter of apology and all this stuff. The first thing is he apologized. I would not have apologized. I would have told this guy to go pound sand in 6 Ways to Sunday. And then they had the chair of the university board get involved, and he said, this is getting mine, the board's full attention. We have complete confidence in this Caccioni guy and the management team. They're thoughtfully managing the situation. No, they're not. They're psychos. They're self-infatuated psychos who literally went on Twitter and obsessed over what he liked and didn't like. Are you people mental? This is stupid. Whatever happened to, free speech, my gosh. It's this old leftist boomer who gets on there for the love. But that's kind of like what is happening that with all of these different universities. Even if you have faculty that go against the grain, they target them. And now you got them cataloging likes. I wish this guy wouldn't have apologized. He gave up way too quickly. And it was. You can like whatever. All we would have to do is say, yeah, this was my opinion, or I liked it because it's similar to my opinion, or I was bookmarking it. Do you not know how to bookmark tweets, you FUD? Do you not know how this works? I just do not reward stupidity by placating it. I do not pretend that it is on the same level as reason or logic. I do not entertain it at all. I reject it outright. Because it's not compassion to make people easy in their stupidity. It's laziness to do that. When you're making someone easy in their ridiculousness, in their stupidity, and in their ideological bigotry, you not only perpetuate the problem, but you also, you're like giving up. and you're not doing them any favors. It's like the opposite of compassion. Golly. Meanwhile, Bud Light earnings have dropped now by 26%. It was, what, 17% last week?
Yep.
26% now. I cannot believe they still have not figured out how to handle this. I cannot believe it. I mean, I have ideas, but it'll cost you. Cost them. I cannot believe, I mean, it's Anheuser-Busch. They should have, apparently they switched marketing teams. They brought, and now they brought in this dude to handle the marketing. I really think that they, I think they need to bring in some bros to handle the marketing, honestly. I mean, we don't even have to go back that far. I mean, like, bring in, I have, like, idea. They could do, like, I mean, I think they should do stuff with female athletes, and I think they should bring back the 80s pinups.
Yeah.
I think they should bring, like, the old 80s Chippendale thingies. I don't, is that even a thing anymore? Because there's probably some women that like that. Women like muscular dudes, bring some of those and bring a whole spectrum
go back to
of
the
types
beach.
In and be like, everybody likes beer.
Yeah, go back to the beach volleyball commercials.
Yeah, just be like, everybody likes beer.
Right.
And have like all these different types of people. Everybody likes beer. That's your ad. You're welcome. If I see you run it, I'm going to come after you.
Right.
That's the ad. That's it. Golly. They need new marketing people. All right, we got to get moving.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And, of course, make sure you subscribe to Chapter and Verse over at Substack. All kinds of good stuff coming out at ya. And find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. All right. So today in stupidity, I don't know how you're going to handle this because you're awash in clips.
Oh, man. It was tough to find one. I lie. This is KJP. She says it's clear that the only practical path to avoid a default is for us to suspend the debt limit without conditions. This is her.
Given the limited time Congress now has, it is clear that the only practical path to avoid default is for Congress to suspend the debt limit without conditions.
No. See, here's the thing. Why can't they figure out how much they can spend before they push bills through that actually do the spending?
They should not at all pass any kind of debt ceiling, any kind of budget until the border's secure, and they can start by defunding the ATF too. That's how it has to be done. Folks, we'll be back tomorrow. God bless. Have a great night.